home team.
And here we go.
And to the home team, presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. Chris and Jeff are here together for the first time. It's been a long time, a couple of weeks.
Yep. How was your vacation, by the way? Did you pick any future winners?
It was solid. Not futures, but I did come out ahead. I had the first day. I had a couple of tennis plays on the first day I was there, that Monday. Venus and Serena were playing out at Indian Wells. I had Venus. And then Young Chung took out Thomas Berdych. So I was up immediately. Then I gave that back the first day of the tournament on Thursday. I had a couple of brutal losses, including Davidson catching 4.5 from Kentucky.
Yeah.
And they lost by 5.
Somebody sent me, oh, you know what? I think it was Darren Revelle posted on Twitter video of a guy who had Kansas minus 4.5. And was it Seton Hall hit a 3 at the end of the game to cut it to 4?
Yes. Yeah, because I on that on Friday, I got it all back. I went 3-0 in my tournament plays. But yeah, I had Seton Hall, and there was another one too where somebody threw in a late. There were two games where somebody threw in a shot late.
Just
that
a back. Oh, that shot doesn't matter.
Ended up covering.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, but the thing with that Davidson one, they threw in a late 3.
Yeah,
because that number started at 6. So depending on where you got it, you might have covered. But I got it at 4.5, and it didn't do me any good. But because they threw in, they got an offensive rebound, and then threw one out to somebody standing beyond the 3-point arc and knocked it down to lose by 5.
And Kentucky had pushed that game to like 9 or 11.
They'd gotten up by 11 with, I think, less than a minute to play.
Right.
And that Kansas-Seton Hall game was wild, too, because in the last, 59 seconds, they scored, 38 points or something. It wasn't that many, but it was, a ridiculous number of points between, threes and free throws. And then, Seton Hall doing the thing where they weren't just settling for a 3. They'd go in, take the 2-point layup, and then foul immediately and just on and on. But they kept it within striking distance. They trailed by 7. And knocked in that late 3-pointer. So yeah, I ended up I came out on top.
And you had some serious snow there. You sent me one picture. I said, "Is that you?" It's a UConn Jack there going through.
There's a lot of snow.
I mean, how many feet did y'all?
I would estimate there was at least 2.5 or 3 feet because
good
the snow.
Gosh.
You'd walk in it and it would be up above my knees, and I still wasn't hitting the ground.
I mean,
there's still snow underneath me.
All right, did you visit the Ponderosa or find Fredo's body?
I did not.
Okay.
Yeah. I looked for Fredo, but I think the lake was pretty cold.
That's a deep lake, too.
Yeah, yeah. And it was probably pretty chilly. So I didn't see his bones or anything.
Did you ever watch Bonanza?
That had Lorne Greene in
yeah.
it. I've seen it, but I'm not.
Anyway, that was on Lake Tahoe, too. That's
oh,
where
was
the
it?
Ponderosa was there. But that was my favorite Western TV show. That's what Michael Landon was Little Joe. Then you had Hoss.
Okay.
So, yeah, I loved.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm aware of it. I'm sure I've seen an episode or two, but.
And I'm not a big Western guy, but Bonanza's great.
Yeah, I knew enough to know that Lorne Greene was in it.
There you go.
All right, let's jump into today's 5 at 5 now. Brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. This will include a question about a subject that I am almost certain that Jeff cares very little to nothing about. You want that first, or you want me to save that for later?
No, you got to save that for later.
All right. Well, Jeff, we'll start with Georgia football, where spring practice has sprung. So what are some of the things that we might be concerned about here in the spring we need to get figured out, if anything, from this team that was they were a championship team last year, won the Rose Bowl and the SEC title.
That's right.
So what are we looking for as this spring unfolds now?
These are the types of things you can't force it. They're natural and they're organic, but it's the leadership. And the things you can't take for granted, basically the three best players on the team were incredible leaders in Roquan Smith, Sony Michel, and Nick Chubb. How much is that going to be missed? Now, Georgia loses a lot of talent off defense and loses an excellent punter. Losing those backs, the best offensive lineman on the team, Georgia will still be very good. And Again, it's my belief that this program will win a national title or two in 2019-2020. But for this season, there is a lot to replace, and this is going to be the first real reload. There might even be a couple of positions where the Dogs are more talented than last season, but a lot of that's going to be youth. And another big key is going to be the growth of the offensive line, because even if you think, even in the win over Tech, you know, there were a couple of runs that Sony had that even a good back, he's getting tackled for no gain or for a loss. I mean, so you think how many great plays he was able to make by dodging tacklers. Now, what you hope for this season is the offensive line is a lot better, and George will still have – now, you know, the odds of the backs being that good, and we'll see when Zamir White comes around. But, you know, what these guys leave behind, they're going to be some big shoes to fill, but that's part of being a great program. You got to be able to reload. And I do think, Chris, kind of like we've said, I think Georgia's capable every Saturday of going out and winning, but like you've said, might not go out there and beat Tennessee and Florida 41-0 and 42-7. You know, it might have to be 24-7 and 31-14.
Yeah, I mean, still real. I don't think they should lose to them.
No, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, no way Georgia should lose to Tennessee in Athens this season.
No,
that would be a terrible, terrible loss.
It'd be an awful loss. But, I mean, South Carolina's going to be tough. Missouri's going to be tough. But I just think the big thing is just the leadership. And really, those guys, they made the coach's job so much easier when your best players do things the right way.
Yeah. And, again, I'll say it when you talk about, like, when Missouri and South Carolina are two of the games in your schedule that are you're freaking out about the most, your schedule's, like, sets up well.
It sets up well. There's no question.
So to still have another successful year, what are the positions you think Georgia could actually be like more talented at this year than last season?
More talented. This is, I think we might be more talented at in the secondary,
but younger. Yeah,
that's a scary spot to be young back there. I think the offensive line absolutely will be more talented, but Isaiah Wynn leaves really big shoes to fill, and I think George is going to be more talented at quarterback.
Well, yeah, and we've got go from Fromm and Eason, and now you got Fromm and Fields.
Right, and Fromm with a year of experience under his belt.
And your guy Stetson Bennett.
Stetson Bennett, Stet the Jet. You know, I don't know if it'll be as good because John Atkins and Trenton Thompson are gone, but I think the defensive line could be really good too, Chris.
Well, that's, you know, you bring that up, and I brought this up yesterday, but with the idea of, like, boy, I mean, Georgia's got to replace Roquan Smith, who has been invited to the NFL draft. He's projected to be a top 15 pick. The guy had one of the great single seasons in Georgia history, being the first ever Butkus Award winner, had over 100. We know what the impact that Roquan had last year. But I was thinking yesterday, like, sitting here a year ago at the start of spring practice, there wasn't anyone who imagined the season Roquan was about to have.
No, we knew he was a very good player. And I can remember even after the 16 season, you said, I think – there was one all-SEC caliber player for Georgia this year, and that was Roquan Smith. And I said, yeah, I agree. I thought he was Georgia's best player. And the thinking was, all right, this is an all-SEC caliber guy. You didn't think – I mean, in my opinion, he should have won the Heisman Trophy. But, again, that goes back to a great player making himself better and taking it to the next level.
So who on this roster right now potentially could blossom unexpectedly like Roquan did.
And let's say this is somebody who's not a true freshman, because we don't know yet.
No, I think somebody that's, you know, played last year like Roquan had, who had a good – he led Georgia in tackles in 2016, but he wasn't on any of the postseason all-conference list after 2016. Now, he was first-team all-SEC heading into 2017, but again, No one imagined Roquan would basically be the best linebacker in the country or turn into that.
Let's go DeAndre Walker 1, Jonathan Ledbetter 2, and Tyler Clark 3.
Yeah. See, that's where you're talking about the defensive line, where if the linebacking unit is not going to be as strong as last year's unit was, I think it's the defensive line with Ledbetter and Clark that could be the strength of the defense this year, instead of the linebacking core.
They're going to have to be. And now you start thinking about that D-line, Chris, with a two – let's just say the tackles. You got Clark, Rochester, Mikael Carter, and Daquan Hawkins-Muckle. You got Ledbetter and Marshall at end. And then you got Justin Young and Michael Barnett. You got Devontae Wyatt, who came in and actually took part in bowl practice. One of the things I like about Wyatt, he played fullback, too, in high school. So,
well, Georgia needs another one of those,
there
right?
There you go. And then you know, we'll see with Jordan Davis, a big guy coming in the fall. So I the defensive line is going to have to be really good. Georgia's going to be talented at linebacker, but, I mean, come on. Roquan, Lorenzo Carter, I mean, you're not going to be as good.
Well, it's like, for me, like Clark and Walker primarily are two guys that had – I mean, really big seasons last year, but everyone was just completely overshadowed by what Roquan did. And, I mean, including DeAndre Walker, who ended up with more sacks and tackles for losses than Roquan and Lorenzo Carter had last year.
And, by the way, I thought Clark was the biggest key to Georgia cutting into Oklahoma's lead. He started dominating the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And he had that one possession where what he had, like, a TFL, a sack. He made three big plays on one possession.
He had a couple of big plays, too, against the Irish early on
in
the year.
Yes, he did. So there's David Marshall's really good. That's a guy who's made a lot of big plays. You know, Hawkins Muckle blocked the field goal against Auburn. Mikael Carter's good. I mean, there's some good. Now, but the question is somebody going to elevate and be that All-American caliber player?
Yeah.
Be a dominator. Now, I'm not saying there's a Deron Payne over there, but one thing that Bama's had, and listen, Kirby knows this as well as anybody, at all three levels, you need to have that All-American caliber player, and you need to have that All-SEC caliber sidekick.
Well, I mentioned this guy too yesterday, and I completely get it. I mean, his reliability certainly is in question, but I think there's a reason why Georgia found a workaround to its drug policy to keep Natress Patrick on the team.
Well, if you think about this, Chris, what a difference it makes. If Patrick can go and if he's reliable and ready to go, then with he and Walker, you got two seniors. And Walker, I know he didn't start last year, but he was basically like the football equivalent of an excellent sixth man in basketball. I mean, his stats – like, I mean, compared favorably to Carter's and Bellamy's.
Yeah.
And so you feel, all right, at those two spots. So let's say then at your original core four starting linebackers, you got one of those four back in with Walker. Then you say, all right, we got two of our five guys back. That kind of – it lessens that blow a little bit. Then you feel like you're only basically starting new with half your squad as opposed to – three quarters of it. So whether it's Monty Rice or McBride or Walter Grant or Jaden Hunter or one of the true freshmen that jumps in there, Quay Walker or Cox or Adam Anderson, just with Patrick and Walker, that's two seniors there who have played a lot.
Right. I mean, a question Walker's probably going to have to answer is, was he a product of Roquan and Carter? And,
of course.
You know, what's he going to look like from a production standpoint when he's getting the attention? I mean, chances are then he won't have the numbers that he did, but that doesn't mean he still won't be and isn't a really good player. But the way I see between Clark and Ledbetter, Patrick and Walker, and then Baker in the secondary, Georgia's got a potential all-SEC guy at every level of its defense. You know, and I mean, maybe you're not going to have the best player in the country at his position like Roquan was last year, but again – sitting here last spring, I don't think anyone had figured and pegged Roquan to be that type of player. And, you know, there's certainly enough really good players on Georgia's defense that maybe there is a guy like that that could emerge and have a season similar to that.
Somebody's got to emerge in the secondary, too. We got to get a ball hawk in that secondary. That was one thing Georgia really didn't have last year. With Georgia's front, when you think about some of the great DBs who've played in Athens through the years, I mean, somebody should have had 8-10 interceptions last year with Georgia's defensive front. So we need that ball hawk to emerge. Maybe it's Richard LeCount. I mean, the guy can play. You know, he got his feet wet last year.
Well, it sounded like yesterday Kirby is optimistic that Gibbs is going to be back by the fall. He's not there now. But, you know, Trent Thompson, I guess, took a similar path last year. He wasn't here for the spring or even enrolled in classes and still came back. Look, Baker had three picks last year. J.R. Reed had two. I guess, well, Sanders is gone. He had four. But, you know, even last year was the time there were a couple that Georgia had in its hands they probably should have caught and didn't.
Yes.
in different games.
Well, I think about even at Notre Dame, J.R. Reed had one that, I mean, it would have been a pick six.
Yeah.
We only scored one not last year. That's another thing. I think for this team, too, when you look at what Georgia loses as that offense develops, I think 12 games, I think six knots needs to be a goal.
There has to be a return touchdown this year.
Nicole's got it.
Yeah, between a punt or a kick or something. It's just I couldn't believe there wasn't one last year.
Now, let me ask you this. If there's a true freshman, and I'm not talking about at the end of the year against Tech and then hopefully the SEC title game, if there's a true freshman on defense at any of the three levels that you could see coming in and grabbing a starting job or, say, by the third, fourth game becoming the starter, who would it be?
I mean, I guess I have to stick with my guy, with Adam Anderson.
Adam Anderson.
Although Brenton Cox has, you know, he's already here.
I mean, that's the next – those two are the next bookends. We all know that. I would say that Tyson Campbell's going to get a long look at corner. Now, he didn't come in early, but, I mean, this guy's an elite recruit.
Yeah.
And we need that other corner over there. I mean, Ty McGee's probably. And that's the thing, too. You know, you do have McGee, who's got experience. And, you know, LeCount played a good bit as a freshman last year. But, you know, to lose Aaron Davis and Sanders and Parrish, I mean, that's three of the five guys who played a majority of the snaps. So, between the guys who got their feet wet as true freshmen last year, the guys who redshirted and the newcomers, you know, what Georgia signed, I think, what do we figure, seven corners the last 2 years?
And does that count Webb, who moved over there?
No, it does not. So that would be eight. But two other guys who I think will be right in the mix are Mark Webb and Amir Speed.
Yeah, and they both played last year.
They did.
A little bit. What about Wilson, who's in an early enrollee? I mean,
yeah, it's just see if he's ready.
Yeah. I mean, he is here already.
That's a huge step up. And I've noticed, too, with the guys who come in early, obviously it benefits them in the fall. Usually where you see that biggest benefit is their sophomore year because they've had a full season in two springs. So they really feel more the grizzled veteran, and they know what to expect going into that spring practice, their second one.
These guys that aren't here, I question their loyalty.
It's like, wait, I still got to finish high school still. Come on.
No. You're way off base there. Tyson Campbell should be here already if he really wants to win.
But I could see Webb or Speed. I'm going to go ahead and guess they're the two top candidates. But that's the thing, too. We know Baker's a senior, so, you know, so then you got to think for 2019, like, all right, because that's another thing. All right, Walker, Patrick, and Baker. You know you got to replace those guys. You know, Ledbetter's a senior. He's going to be gone. So for that 20, that's you just constantly got to reload. Got to reload.
Well, I mean, the last two recruiting classes are going a long way on that front, except really, I guess, on the defensive line.
That's got a big pickup there.
Yeah, out of Memphis.
Yes.
Out of Jeremy Pruitt's backyard. Now, I thought him being a high school coach was going to mean he was going to be a good recruiter, but – he's got two of the top three players in Tennessee are committed elsewhere already.
Vol fan Rob's yelling at the radio right
Sorry
now.
Sorry about that. It's nothing against you, Vol fan
no,
Rob.
No, we love you. I mean, I was rooting hard for Tennessee in the SEC championship game and against Loyola. They had a great basketball season.
Although their former head coach is now apparently Nick Saban's intern.
Yep.
That's what he called him yesterday. Butch Jones was interning.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's
demeaning.
It is. If Butch had any respect for himself, he'd, like, leave.
Yeah.
To be called an intern.
I mean, it's like he's made all this money. That's when you need to take a year away, dude.
I read that he supposedly a stipulation in his contract.
Does he have to try and find a job?
Yeah.
So then Tennessee pays the difference.
Right. But, I mean, this gig he's got can't be paying him, but, like, 50 grand or something. Like, interns are supposed to be unpaid anyway, aren't they?
What, does he want to work in radio?
Yeah.
I'd love to make 50 grand.
Yeah. That's the problem with radio. Everyone wanders around here. Let's do it for nothing. That seems like a lot of fun.
I had a guy one time say, oh, that ain't even work, what you do. I'm like, oh, God.
I agree. It's not, well, it's not hard work,
no,
but it is work.
It is work.
Yeah, you got to put some effort into it.
It was work last night, I'll tell you that.
Jeff, moving on in today's 5 at 5. Now, Georgia held its pro day today. I was reading that yesterday at Penn State's Pro Day, not only were there NFL scouts and GMs and coaches, but there was also a scout from the World Wrestling Federation.
Nice.
So let me, who for Georgia out of this group would make a really good pro wrestler? We've already had a great one in Goldberg who's going into the Hall of Fame next month prior to WrestleMania. But like if a WWE scout was down here.
I'm telling you what. I'm just going to go straight size here, Big John Atkins. And I could see Big John, too, in one of those singlets that used to have, like, the two straps over there.
Yeah.
That guy gets you in a big bear hug. Curtains.
Yeah.
So I'm going Big John Atkins.
I got to go because he already cuts a mean promo, but it got to be Bellamy.
With shoulder pads.
Well, with that and also the, humble yourself. So He already talks some trash. So he's got that. I think he's got that down.
I saw when I was driving in today, there was a gentleman out walking in Five Points. I'm just guessing the age, 75, 80. He had a Humble Yourself t-shirt on.
Good for him, yeah.
Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, Bellamy's selling those things now.
Good for him.
So, yeah, he's got that. So he cuts a good promo already. He's a good trash talker. So I'm going to go with Bellamy being.
Be a good tag team.
Yeah, Bellamy and Atkins?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Not bad at all. All right, Jeff, now here's the question that I'm almost certain you cared nothing about, but I don't know if you saw this, but the Braves sent Ronald Acuna down to the minors. Now, Acuna is the, he's hit like 400 in the spring with four home runs.
He's the hot shot prospect.
Yeah, he's like 20 years old, and he's clearly should be the Braves' starting left fielder on opening day, but the Braves are sending him down to the minors to avoid getting his clock from ticking.
So they'll bring him up in May.
Probably before that.
That's what didn't the Nationals do that with Strasburg and Harper? That's what
the Cubs did it with Bryant.
There you go.
Although Bryant filed a grievance because it was pretty clear, like, I should be on the major league roster, and you're sending me down to the minors. Like, they always have to make an excuse for, like, development reasons. And that, the Braves said that, too. They're bringing him down to continue to develop himself. So, but here's the thing, like, Brandon McCarthy, who's a big Seinfeld fan and is the Braves pitcher, he yesterday started going in on this and said, like, he gets the business side of it, but his problem is that fans don't have a problem with it. That fans are just like, hey, it makes sense. You send them down, we think we're going to stink anyway, but he's in the era of a two wild card system. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to miss, I think, the first 12 games of the season, and they can bring him up.
So that's, you know, 1/12 of the season.
Yeah, so, like, where do you fall on that? Is it the Braves making a wise move because they can sacrifice 12 games for basically another year of control for this guy? Or in the era of the two wild card system, I mean, the Braves, should they be putting their best foot forward from the beginning of the season?
Well, this team is not good enough. They're not the Astros. They're not the Dodgers. They're not the Yankees where they could just sputter through 12 games and still hope to make the playoffs. So I agree with Brandon McCarthy. I'm just going to agree with him because he's a Seinfeld fan. I get the Braves from the business standpoint too, but then that also brings up that this is an insanely stupid rule that all these elite guys, we have to send them down for 2 weeks so the clock won't start. There's clearly just one of these mindless rules in that teams are mitigating and
just taking advantage. I mean, they're within the rules, but they are obviously taking advantage of
them. So they're basically throwing a curveball there. So they're projecting this guy, just like as you brought up the Cubs with Bryant, the Nationals with Strasburg and Harper. They're just assuming that these guys, whenever the big contract would have to come up in 4 years or whatever it is.
I think it's 6 years before you can reach free agency.
Okay.
And then like a year counts as like 170 something days.
Okay.
So that's why they're going to sit him down for.
I mean, I get it, but it's also, I mean, I agree too. It's like you should have your best team out there, and that should be a rule. That should be something too that the Players Association and the powers that be ought to be able to agree on. Being like, look, this is ridiculous. We're not putting our best product out there. And, you know, they can also take a lesson from the NBA when you got about a third of the league is trying to tank every season.
Yeah.
You need to have your best players out there.
And that's the thing. Like, people shot back at McCarthy with, like, you guys are going to stink anyway. And he went, well, everyone thought the Twins and the Diamondbacks are going to be bad last year, and they made the playoffs because you have the second wild. There's two wild cards
and
now.
And as you pointed out, too, these guys, these players, they're coming out of spring training thinking, hey, we've got our team together. This is our team. Let's see how it shakes out.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm, honestly, as somebody who thinks the Braves are going to be bad this season, it's the Braves are doing the right thing by waiting a couple of games to have Acuna. But I see, I mean, I see McCarthy's point too. McCarthy's not thinking that way, and
we want to win.
The guy that should be playing left field from the get go for the Braves—that's potentially that's 12 important games.
So what, 12 times 12 is 144. So that's like 1/13th, 1/14th of the season.
Yeah, I think he's the opening series is against the Phillies. They play the Nationals twice, and they go, I think, Colorado out on the road is another one he'll miss. And then he'll be eligible to come back and play. They actually play a series at Wrigley Field, would be their 13th game against the Cubs. Wow. And that would be when they could.
Why are they going to Colorado in April?
I don't. They went out there a couple of years ago and it snowed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think even the Rockies, that'd be what, like, yeah, we'll come to Atlanta.
Yeah, they should switch that. But no, Atlanta's getting that out of the way early. But anyway, so.
This is clearly one of those you can see both sides, but the rule is just ridiculously written now, and everybody's just circumventing it and taking advantage.
And it's one of those deals, too, where, like, you know, the business side of sports starts to cross over, and as a fan, you've got to accept that. Like, oh, it makes smart business sense for the Braves to do this, but at the same time, it's, I don't know. I mean, potentially it is. It's 12 games where Atlanta won't be putting its best lineup out there because Acuna's definitely proven that she should be in it this year with what he's done. First of all, when they called him up to AAA last year, mm-hmm. and he was knocking the cover off the ball, and he's doing the same thing this spring. I think at 44 at-bats, he hit like four. I think his average was like 460-something.
Wow.
And he had four home runs.
So he's around 20 hits.
Yeah. He was, and then they had to send him down the other day, though, to keep his clock from ticking. All right, that's today's 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. We'll